Good evening. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Tonight, in the vein of the last two broadcasts, we're going to stick with radio, only tonight you're going to be the guest. How about that? You see, I know out in this listening audience, which stretches all around the world, over the internet, and rebroadcast on about 600 or 700 low-power and micro-broadcasters in the United States and Canada. And in all of that tremendous audience, I know without any doubt that there are really experts out there who know all about radio, much more probably than I ever will. Now, I'm not talking about broadcasting like I'm doing right now, because I know, you know, a modicum about that. I'm talking about building home radio stations, CB stations, amateur radio stations. Whether you're licensed or not, I really don't care. That's a matter of your own conscience once you understand the law and the true authority of the FCC. Then it's up to you whether or not you want to stand on the law or submit to tyranny. That's your choice. But we want to concentrate tonight on building home radio stations that will serve all of us in time of emergency. A network, if you will, of people who listen to the Hour of the Time, who are educated and conversant upon world events, real world events, and the real forces behind them. We want to be able to talk to each other. Should the whole structure of Western civilization come tumbling down around our ears? We hope that it doesn't. But we can look around us and see tremendous forces working hard to try and bring that about. Specifically, looming in the immediate future is the big bugaboo Y2K. We've already determined that Y2K is not really the issue, whatever inconvenience it may cause, whether minor or major, those inconveniences will be solved. And people who are properly prepared have no need to worry. The sky is not falling. But the hysteria and the panic being whipped up by individuals and organizations, not just here in this country, but around the world, could cause some very terrible things to happen. Wouldn't it be nice if we could build a network of CB radios, amateur radio stations, shortwave transmitters, without spending tremendous sums of money? And I can tell you right now, it can be done, because Doyle and I have done it here. You see, there is a lot of old equipment out there. The question is determining which is the best of that old equipment and which we should stay away from. Those are the questions that we want to try to get answered tonight from those of you in the listening audience who know more about all of this stuff than I ever will. Where do we get tubes for these radios? All of the radios that have been touted as what you should purchase and buy in case of an emergency are the wrong radios, and most of you already know that because we have discussed it lightly. Anything that has a computer chip in it is subject to destruction with a simple electromagnetic burst. It can be from a handheld unit, such as now used by some police forces to stop your car on the freeway simply by aiming it at your engine and pulling a trigger. They can emit an electromagnetic burst that will fry every chip that your engine uses to operate. Same with your radios. Any kind of an atomic or hydrogen burst in the atmosphere will cause an electronic or an electromagnetic emission that will destroy all computer chips within a certain tremendous radius of miles. I have heard some experts say that one major atomic burst anywhere above the United States would destroy all computer chips in the country. I do not know if that is in fact true, but I do know that it will destroy all computer chips within a certain radius of that airburst. And so it behooves us as responsible individuals to be prepared for that. Why are we buying radios that contain computer chips? Why are we not calling up the tremendous number of old tube radios that are still in perfect operating condition? And I understand from talking to experts in this field, whom I have contacted over the internet, that tubes are plentiful. Another question we need answered by those in the listening audience tonight is, where do we get these radios tuned up, specced out, repaired? How can we get them brought up to standards? And I'm talking about the original, or as close to the original, specifications upon which these radios were supposed to operate when they were first manufactured. I've got to tell you, there are some good radios out there. We purchased several years ago one of the best Sangean radios available. Sangean is a good brand. I don't care what anybody says or tells you, Sangean is a good modern radio. However, it will not operate after it has experienced an electromagnetic burst, from whatever the source. Now, I've used that radio. It's state-of-the-art. It's sort of mid-range. It's not really expensive, nor is it cheap. And it works really well, or at least I thought it did, until I purchased a Helicrafters S108. And when I hooked that Helicrafters S108 up to the same long wire antenna that I had been using with a Sangean, I was amazed. I was pulling in stations that we never knew existed before and couldn't even begin to hear with the Sangean. This S108 was an old radio from the early 50s. At least that's my guesstimate of when it was manufactured. I guess early 50s. Somewhere in the 50s time frame. It is fantastic. It will receive AM upper and lower sideband and everything from 10 meters all the way up to 80 meters. And a few things in between that I think it's not supposed to receive. And I don't know whether that's because it's out of spec or what. But I'm very happy with it. So tonight, folks, we're going to talk about these kinds of things. 2 meter. Shortwave. Amateur. We're going to talk about CB. For instance, we purchased a really, really nice CB radio, which is a Siltronics 1011C. They also have the 1011D. What's beautiful about this radio is it not only receives and transmits all 40 of the shortwave bands, receives and transmits on all of the CB, our citizens band frequencies, which is the 11 meter. It also operates on upper and lower sideband, and it receives and transmits on the 10 meter band, which is amateur radio. On the AM side, it transmits with 50 watts of power in normal AM, or the normal 40 channels, and 75 watts on upper and lower sideband. That's measured with a meter right off of our set. So I can tell you it's true. If you buy a modern CB radio, what you get is 4 watts if you're lucky. 4 watts if you're lucky. And if you can find a good linear, you can pump it up from there. A linear is just an amplifier that goes between the radio and the antenna and boosts the power of the signal. Now, you may or may not be able to do this depending upon whether or not you intend to follow the FCC rules. And I suggest that if you do not have a good legal foundation and a good knowledge of why you should not, and be able to apply that and win in the court of law, then you had better follow what they tell you to do. But in case of an emergency, all that disappears. It flies out the window. In an emergency, no one is ever going to hold it against anybody for using excess power over that required by the FCC in order to save your life or the lives of others. No one is going to convict you in any court for doing that. You see, when it becomes life or death, extraordinary measures are called for. And using those extraordinary measures are always forgiven. So let's open the phone lines and let's see who's listening out there who knows something about what we're talking, the subject of tonight's broadcast. Let's see who in the listening audience can be our special guest or guests. You know, I'm willing to let you talk as long as you want to talk, as long as you're contributing to the knowledge base of the listening audience on tonight's subject matter. And when you run out of steam, we'll take another call, and that person can then become our guest tonight on the Hour of the Time. The number is 520-333-4578. That's 520-333-4578. What do you think about this idea? Do you think that we could build a network like we did of micro broadcasters across the country, across this country, and maybe even around the world? So that in case of real emergency, whether licensed or not, we can communicate with each other. And I know that some die-hard people out there will say, well, you can't do that. Well, I'm here to tell you, we can do it. And we probably will do it. And as long as we don't abuse the equipment or the airwaves, and as long as we only use it when it's necessary in an emergency, life or death situations, and no one is going to fault us for that. 520-333-4578. Let's hear from some of you people out there who are the real radio experts. If you disagree with this, tell us why. We're all eager to get your input. Let's have a little laugh. Let's have a ball. Let's have a little laugh. I want it all. See, folks, I told you that we had all the old stuff. I mean, how many of you ever heard that? Let's have a luau. Good evening. You're on the air.
All right, check it out, man. You guys talking about transmitting on 11 meters, right?
Transmitting on whatever we have to in case of an emergency where there really is a need to be able to do that. Go ahead.
It's a 2950 radio that I'm utilizing.
It's Ranger Communications?
RCI, yes. And it's a 2950. Barefoot is capable after modification on the 11-meter band, which it'll go from 26 flat to 32 flat. It's capable of 25 watts on AM, 30 on sideband. It has FM.
That's pretty good for a citizen's band, what started out to be a citizen's band radio.
Actually, it started out to be 10 meters. It's been modified.
Oh, I see.
You know, there's a bunch of radios out there that you can do that with. In addition to that, as you said, you can also incorporate a linear amplifier. I myself am operating a Make, or not Make, go ahead.
Hey, Paul, can I interrupt you for a moment and ask you to talk a lot louder? Our phone patch here is a speaker phone with a microphone about 14 inches away from it.
Okay. Well, I didn't know if I was going to bleed back through my shortwave. I've got it going in the next room. But,
oh, you're doing fine.
Okay. As I said, I incorporated on my particular station here a Nitro 300 amplifier, which is like circa 1979 or something like that. It might even be earlier than that. But it's a glass, you know, amplifier. It uses a 4/6 LQ6 is driving one, and on the high stage I can achieve on the peak about 4.25, about 425 watts, driving it with say 1.75 watts.
So what kind of range does that give you, Paul?
Well, actually the other day I spoke with Australia, Oregon, Washington. Yesterday I talked to New Hampshire, Jamaica, Bermuda, Trinidad. This afternoon, I spoke from, let's see, who was I talking to here? It was California, Ontario, Canada, a place called Woodstock, Ontario, Canada. And this is all on the free band, they call it, the free band, which is above 40, just below the 10-meter band, which is not legal to operate on, naturally, but there are a bunch of people out there that, you know, say something about the networking of, say, micro broadcast. You know, the networking of pirates was like that up until a few months ago here on 6955 upper sideband. You know, there was radio nonsense, and it seemed like every time that Joe Mama got on there, there was five or six other people, you know, and after his program, they just had like pirate chat, you know, first back and forth. It was really a great thing. Of course, Joe Mama's deceased now. He died back in October in a motorcycle accident. But, you know, hopefully there's some other good people out there that'll, you know, keep up the good work.
Oh, there always is.
You know, yeah. Well, the FCC's really been cracking down on them. I think they had three major busts in like December, according to my monitoring Times magazine.
Well, we don't encourage anyone to violate the law unless they have a good foundation in the law for doing what they're doing. And according to our research, the FCC is extremely limited in its authority and enforcement capabilities anyway.
Yes, to my understanding, it has gotten to the point where the FCC is so overwhelmed with all this, especially with all the internet stuff that's going on now, that it'd be enough to overwhelm anyone, as well as communications via telephone, via satellite, you know, TV,
Yeah, how do they get into all of this stuff?
How did I get into it?
No, the FCC. How did they get into all of this stuff? I mean, their only mandate was to license and regulate commercial, interstate, and international broadcasting.
Well, that goes back into the early years of Citizens Band. Actually, it was originally 23 channels.
Yeah.
But you had 8 channels in there, which were for remote, garage door openers. When they first started out with those, all that's within the 11 meter band. As you said yourself, regulate. They are there to rule and regulate you. Any federal administration's that way, and I'm not trying to be anti-government, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
Of course not. Obeying the law is not anti-government. Unfortunately, the FCC chooses not to obey the law in many instances.
Well, for instance, you look at the frequency that you're transmitting on right now. Okay, now I was told that it's probably propagation, but I really don't buy that. I really don't. I mean, there's a station from Mexico that I'm getting on my receive, and then I've got World Harvest Radio, which is just below you guys, okay? And there's a couple other stations that are right on center slot on this frequency. Now, the radio that I'm listening to you on right now is it's a very old radio, but it's a classic. It's a Holocrafter SX96. I don't know if you're familiar with older tube-type shortwave equipment. I myself like tube-type equipment. It's solid. It's rock solid, man. And if you run it right, it lasts forever.
That's what we're recommending, and that's what we want to talk about most tonight.
Yeah, well, I would recommend tube-type equipment for anybody that has a lick of sense and is willing to actually, work hands-on with equipment. It's totally hands-on equipment. Now, don't get me wrong. It requires a lot of adjustment. It requires a lot of patience. But the performance is superior. I mean, I have a Radio Shack EX440 shortwave receiver that's a portable.
Yeah, that's really a Sangian,
What's that?
It's a Sangian with the Radio Shack brand name on it.
Yeah, well, this one that I have, it just went defunct on me the other night, man. I mean, it's showing the frequency readout, everything, but there's no receive. So I had to send it off to Radio Shack. Now I had a problem with my Helicrafter, okay? And I went to a local ham fest. I took the tubes that I thought were toasted, and $5 a piece, $10. I was back up and running for $10.
Wow, that's great.
You know what
I mean? And you did it yourself.
Yeah, it's dirt simple to work on, man. Whereas if you're running, you're running a transistorized equipment, yeah, you can kind of poke around and gas here and there. Yeah, the phase loop lock is all fine and good. It's very nice. It's not hands on. You just set it to frequency and you let it run. But you're going to receive a lot more interference. You're not going to be able to go center slot. You're not going to have the, on mine, it's sensitivity, is what they call it, but essentially it's RF gain.
Uh-huh.
In order to receive you guys this evening, I had to kick my sensitivity down to. Oh, man, I mean, I had to turn it way back down to knock those other frequencies out of there on that spot.
Yeah. That's one of the things that's really hard to learn. When I first started playing around with my Helicrafters S108, I learned that the key to pulling in signals, the one that you want to listen to, is the volume and the sensitivity knob, and really nothing else once you locate the proper frequency. And it really amazes you that you would think that to receive the station you want to listen to really well, you would turn up the sensitivity and the volume, but just the opposite is true.
No, you're correct, though. It's just the opposite, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought the same thing when I first got it. I got this unit about 2 years ago. I picked it up on consignment at a local ham shop here, and I got it for $100, my SX96.
Well, you got a real good deal.
Well, when I was at this last ham fest over here in St. Charles, Missouri, it was the winter fest where I got the tubes. I was asking a gentleman that had a table of Helicrafters set up. Now, he had the 99 and the 100, SX series. He was missing the 96 for his collection. He offered me $200 cash if I went home and got it. Not working.
Uh-huh.
So I'm kind of thinking to myself, well, maybe this piece of furniture is worth something. Which, it'd be the last thing that I'd ever do would be part with that radio. That would be the last piece of equipment to go out of my radio room.
Wow. Well, you know, everything's worth something to whoever needs it. The trick is finding who needs it when you want to get rid of it.
Yes, this is correct. I don't know, you know, if you do much 11-meter or free band activity, but...
I listen to a lot of things, and doing it on that S-108 Halicrafters is a hell of a lot of fun. And you really have to be sensitive with your touch, because when you're tuning one of these things, you don't have the phase lock loop or the digital punch-in thing. You have to set it on the band and on the as near on the band to the frequency that you want to receive, and then you fine-tune on the fine-tune knob. And sometimes when you think that you haven't even moved that knob, you've skipped two or three stations.
Oh, yes. Well, that's where the...
extremely sensitive.
That's where the selectivity knob comes in on the particular unit I have. I mean, I can kick you down selectivity to 0.5 kcs, up to 5. The notches are 5, 3, 1, and 0.5 kcs on the selectivity on this particular unit, which is very nice for finding center slot on a given frequency there, and then click it back up to 5 kcs if you want. But, of course, when you kick it back up to the 5 kc selectivity, it broadens the range, and then again...
Then you get all the interference and the adjacent stations and all that other stuff.
Exactly. You know, I find it operates best at 3 kc setting. You know, if you get a lot of noise in there, you can always click it on the upper sideband mode, and that'll knock a lot of the noise out, too.
Yeah. I've always thought of shortwave listening as a participation sport. And when I first started out, I found out that sometimes when I couldn't hear anything, if I just grabbed the antenna with between my big toe and the next toe and reached over and touched a tomato plant while scratching my left ear, that sometimes I could hear it perfectly.
Yeah. Well, it sounds to me like you might have had a grounding problem. Oh, shame on it. I'm utilizing an antenna. It's sort of semi-experimental. It's we call it a double bazooka. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
Okay. Well, what it is it composes it's a coax-fed antenna. The overall length of it, mine's 10 for 160 meter for transmit and receive, which I do not transmit. I only have receive. But the overall length, I'd say, would be about 150 feet, okay? But the kicker on this antenna is it's a very low-noise antenna. You utilize a 50-ohm coax, okay? And it is fed from the center strand out to the end of the antenna. You have a 300-ohm ladder lead, which is approximately 5 feet long. And the center strand on the coax is shorted to the shield to the 300-ohm as feed points, okay? So essentially what you're doing is you're doubling the length on each leg of the antenna, and the shield acts as it blocks out a lot of extra noise, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it works excellent, this double bazooka does. A friend of mine built it for me for Christmas. As I said, it's kind of an experimental deal. I think he found it through some sort of ham operation publication, shortwave publication, but it is the bomb.
Wow. Do you think, later on I'm going to give the address, do you think you could send me a schematic for that?
Yes, I could do that. Can I just send it to Alan or something, and can he forward it to you, see if I can find a crayon here.
I think Alan's probably busy enough that he probably doesn't need anything like that, but you can send it to us. Just send it to the hour of the time. In care of 101.1 FM.
101 what?
0.1 FM.
0.1 FM.
P.O. Box 940.
940.
Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R.
What was that again?
E-A-G-A-R.
E-A-G-A-R.
Yep, Arizona. 85925. 85925. And we'll just stick that in our info pack, and everybody that writes for information will get a free diagram for an antenna.
Okay, now it's 904. What was 90? Okay, PO box.
PO box 940.
Yeah, I was trying to do the consolidated version here in my shorthand.
I do that from time to time too.
Yeah, that's fine. I could include a couple other ones. Do you have any designs for Z? steps or anything like that?
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, really? That's more of a directional antenna, which you design it along the lines of a long wire, but it's end-fed instead of side-fed.
Oh, I see. What we have been sending out to people is the schematics for an inverted V long wire.
That's the configuration that I have this double bazooka in, and that works great because it not only picks up the horizontally polarized signals, but also the vertically because it's in a sloping pattern.
Yeah, that we found the inverted V works really good with a bare long wire, and with what you're talking about, I can't wait to try that out.
Yeah, actually, you know, it's along the same principles as what you're talking about, but theoretically, you're using twice the length of wire in half the space.
Wow, that's neat.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
By shorting at the end, you feed it, you know, you feed points, you have to the shield, 4-1 on the coax, that's your feed coming in. Okay, and it's center strand, but one center strand goes to the shield, the other goes to the center strand, left and right, so you say, you know, on an inverted D, and utilize that as two feed points to your antenna, and of course a good ground is always important on an older tube type.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
You know, you find yourself kind of leaning up on it, grabbing on your microphone, trying to talk on 11 meters at the same time, next thing you know, it's, yow!
Yeah, you're right.
Another little thing about those older radios is if you do have that happen, if somebody should happen to find they lay their arm on it and get themselves a little bit of a shock, and those older models, they're non-polarized plugs. A lot of times you can unplug it, reverse the polarity on the plug itself going into the outlet, and alleviate that problem in some cases.
Yeah, you know, I learned that when I was a boy. A lot of things will work better with those two-prong plugs if you're having problems with it, if you just unplug it, turn it around, and plug it in again.
Yeah, that's just correct. Anyway, I don't know if you have any other callers out there. You know, I just thought I'd give a call in. I heard you all talking about 11 meters. I just thought I'd let you know there are radios in that work out there. I have people that I talk to on a regular basis out there.
Well, great. We'll just plug into the network.
Yeah. Okay, well, check out sometime in the evening. Listen on 27515 lower sideband, and listen for 911. That would be me.
Okay.
You know, it would be 911, Joe Mamo's radio, in the northern ghettos of St. Louis.
All right, Paul.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Okay, well, happy DXing, my friend.
Thank you.
Okay, 73.
520-333-4578. Well, that was a great call, and I don't know about you, but I learned some things that I did not know before. And Paul said he's going to send us the schematic for the double bazooka, and I can't wait to see it. I like to try things like that. Rigging up a new antenna and trying it out is really inexpensive and a lot of fun, especially if you have good radios to do it with. So let's hear from somebody else out there. We still need a lot of information. Which of the old tube radios are the best? How many of them are there out there? Where do you find them? How do you get tubes? Now, we know about hamfests, and we've talked about those before on this broadcast. All around the country, and I guess if you're not looking for it, you would never know that it happened. But you check the classified ads and the free shopping papers and stuff like that. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Mr. Cooper.
Yes, sir.
I have a question on your EMD destruction on radios.
Uh-huh.
Does that cover the old-time crystal sets? I'm not really a radio expert, but I really like to know the information.
No. It only affects computer chips.
Oh, bless your heart.
Any kind.
By the way, for the public, there is a place in Arizona called Antique Radio Supply that will sell you shortwave AM type crystal set.
Oh. Now, what are you talking about? Are you talking about those little things that we used to make when we were children?
Yes, sir, the old Heathkit style thing.
Yeah, so those are a little better than what we used to make.
Can't say that. I've made my own from a Heathkit, but I just got back in the radio, and I heard you talking about the EMD, and I really feel that might be the answer for a reasonably priced way to go. It's obviously not a transmitting device, but...
No, it's a listening device, but...
Listening device, but that should help a lot of people. It takes no power.
Weren't crystal radios the first receivers that were ever built?
Yes, sir. I think it's based on some of the Marconi principles.
Yes.
So, I just thought I'd throw that in the pot. By the way, I'm here in Ohio, and as soon as you start talking about the radios, VOA kind of cranked up their power and kicked you right in the butt.
VOA is not supposed to be transmitting right now.
Well, buddy, they're on 7405, and they're really gassing it up.
You sure?
I'm catching you on 7415.
You sure that's VOA?
Yes, sir. I heard them ID themselves.
Well, if that's the case, then they're broadcasting at the wrong time out of band. They're not even supposed to be on the air in that frequency at this time. Not anywhere.
Oh, I have no idea about that, but I really enjoy you back on the air. I lost you for about 2 or 3 years, but by God, I'm glad you're back, Bill.
Well, thank you.
I really am. Well, that's about all I had to say, but I wanted to check out them old-time crystal sets. And,
where is this place at? Do you know?
It's called Antique Radio Supply, and it's somewhere in Arizona. I have the catalog, but by golly, I couldn't find it for you right now.
Okay, when you find it, just send me the name and address and the phone number.
I surely will.
Okay.
Bless your heart. Keep on going, brother. We need you.
Thank you, sir. And thank you for your call.
Thank you.
520-333-4578 is the number. Well, there's two good calls. I mean, I know there's an awful lot of people out there listening who know all of the answers to these questions. They may be a little shy. I can't imagine, though, a ham operator or somebody who loves radio that transmits being shy. That just doesn't fit the mold. I would imagine that there are probably some people out there who hold licenses who are just scared to death of this subject and don't want to talk about it because they fit into the sheeple mold, which is basically huge, tremendous herds of cowards that roam at will across the country, bowing and licking the boots of tyranny. And if that be the case, then so be it. We don't really need to hear from that particular area of the population anyway. We support, propagate, and promote real people, not sheeple. Guts, bravery, the ability to study and learn what's right and do it in the face of all opposition, no matter the consequences. Simply because a deal with the devil is still a deal with the devil. There is no such thing as a choice between the lesser or greater of two evils. Anytime you use and choose the lesser of two evils, you have made a deal with the devil. Did you know that? 520-333-4578. The topic tonight is tube type, old radios. How do we set up our own home stations? Where do we get the parts and the tubes and the... Where do we get these radios repaired? Where do we get the radios to begin with? Which ones are the ones to buy and which ones are the ones to stay away from? What do we need to know to be able to operate of this equipment? We need to hear from you.
Thank you.
The best, the very best of all the old music from all the generations gone by. That's what you hear on the hour of the time, and that's what all the people in the Round Valley here in Arizona hear on 101.1 FM, which is our community service nonprofit radio station run by the Family Charitable Trust. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening, Bill. This is Steve up around Kalamazoo. Regarding the radio equipment.
Yeah, Steve, can you help us out here?
Certainly. I've been into conspiracy radio, Bill, ever since the fifth grade when I doctored my crystal radio set that my dad got me trying to be a good dad because, of course, I was the first child. And the instructions obliquely said that it was tuned by this coil and this capacitor, see? So your average fourth or fifth grader says, well, what happens if we fool with this coil? And I got the thing on the middle of the 49-meter, I believe it was, shortwave band, and guess what? None of the news broadcasts matched up. So if the truth is the truth, and the news represents the truth, and all the newses were different, there was something wrong here. Didn't take a fifth grader to figure that out, Bill, so we got a little experience.
Well, wonderful. Sounds like you were a child right around the lines like my brother and I, who liked to experiment.
And as far as radio equipment, because starting out as just a little kid, my meager allowance, because, of course, that first crystal set was only the beginning. Then we moved up to kit super regenerative radios, which the advantage to those things were that if you fooled with some of the parts, you can make a darn good transmitter out of the exact same thing you were receiving on. So that was a lot of fun, but of course, if you had many of them, it just turned into radio chaos. Apologies to Roger Walters there. Waters there.
Be careful about the use of that word kid. You could get me in big trouble.
Oh, that's right. Oops, I did the oopsies. Hopefully Boo's not monitoring. But anyhow, on to the radio equipment. The thing I got into coming up as a young teenager and financing this whole thing off my allowance was Army surplus stuff, which in the late 50s and early 60s was amazingly cheap. Actually, I'm appalled at some of the prices that are currently being got for what little of that equipment remains, because most of it was scrapped out for parts, of course. But back then, I actually used this stuff. Some of the top-of-the-line stuff, of course, is still around, like your Collins Series R390, R389, which was the broadcast band set. Boy, if you ever wanted a broadcast band DX radio made by Collins, that's the Cadillac as far as whatever was done.
You know, I was looking at some of that Collins stuff on the Internet, and I don't think I could even afford to look at it on the Internet.
It sells for more now than it did new then, Bill. I had my first commercially made, not surplus receiver, was a Holocrafters S120, and some of my ham friends were over and we were fooling on the eBar network, which is just, or eBay, whatever the auction thing is, and it's just fascinating as far as seeing pictures of our old rigs way back when, and of course we got rid of because there is better stuff about. But if the issue is now reliability and serviceability and repair history, as far as everybody knows what the bugs are, those old Collins sets, either the commercial ones or my favorites, of course, were always the military ones. There's also another, a vehicular set, which had a vehicular columns, it was an R392 receiver, and these were digital readout, but not electronic digital readout. It was a mechanical meter root sort of arrangement.
Uh-huh.
And on the transmitter side, as far as stuff that doesn't have any semiconductors, any brains to it at all, there was like your holocrafters, many holocrafters transmitters, many Heathkit types of gear, and of course my favorite again was stuff like ART-13 AM aircraft transmitters, which covered from 1.5 megahertz, which of course is 1500 on the AM broadcast band, up through about 18 megahertz unmodified, and they were once upon a time available real cheap and are still relatively inexpensive.
And there's still a lot of all of that stuff that you just named around. I've seen it.
Yeah, and that's it. You know, if the issue is EMP pulse protection, which is what we are talking here, that was what the Russian military philosophy was as far as staying with vacuum tubes for virtually as long as possible, because after the pulse goes through, it'll ionize the tube, but then after the pulse is gone, the tube deionizes, and in a vast number of condition, you know, mass number of trials will still be operable, because the tube radios function on high voltage circuitry where you're dealing with, you know, anywhere from 130, 150 up to 600 volts as far as supply rail. Anything that's solid state is working at a 3 to 5 volt supply rail. So it, A, when it gets the balls through it, it destroys all those junctions. All those junctions just go futz, and it's useless, you know, unless it has been suitably prepared to take EMP pulses, which generally only high-end military stuff currently is.
So yeah.
The Russians are currently, because they stayed current with the tubes, just because it was the most economic way to solve the problem, they're actually the foremost producers of vacuum tubes, both commercial vacuum tubes
as
broadcast stuff, as well as ham and audio, like guitar amplifier-type vacuum tubes.
Yeah, I was just waiting for a break to put that in there, and you beat me to the punch.
Yeah, it's no secret in the electronic industry, Bill. Your copy is, the radio copy on the planet out here in Michigan this evening is just terrible. Normally, of course, record the broadcast, and it's been unrecordable the last three nights. It sounds like either run the power suck on you, or VOA has a couple other transmitters pointed in opposite directions and are basically black backsplattering you guys.
Well, you know what? They can try whatever they want to. They can never silence the voice of truth.
Well, I sure wish it was back at a good satellite feed. Boy, that was just the berries as far as rebroadcasting, because anything that comes over the shortwave, you just always have that atmospheric fade to them. It just, I just like good audio, Guy. I'm sorry.
Well, we would if we could just find a reasonable price on one of the satellite networks I'm trying to think of the name for it, that what do you call it?
The service providers off one of the birds.
Yeah. If we could just find one at a reasonable cost. I mean, since we were on the satellite last, the price has just gone up.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, the birds are getting fried, and the replacement birds cost a lot, and the international bankers want to get paid for financing the replacement birds, and the Bill Cooper's program is part of the mix. They're probably, it probably cost somebody a big time.
Yeah, and I think part of it is to keep those of us who can't pay that big money off of there anyway.
Oh, yeah, you know.
That's really the function of the FCC, is to silence the voice of the people.
Correct, yes. They have to control all means. You know, Bill, when I was coming up, just as another curious radio fact, and I'm sure a lot of other fellow communications geeks out there share the same thing. When I was, like, in my early teens, you know, first getting started in the radio hobby, all the guys were old World War II vets who, of course, picked up their CW in the Navy and, you know, were radio ops during World War II or Korea or whatever. And at that point, you know, we're talking the late Eisenhower years, virtually all the communications, as it is now, was all totally tight. And I was always wondering why all these old guys always always just had such a bad attitude that the country is going to hell in the handbasket and there's commies in the State Department and all like this.
Because they were alive when this country was really free.
Right. But the important thing is, Bill, at that point in time, it was the ham radio operators, those old codgers who had such an attitude, were the only ones that had, at that point, virtually an uncontrolled communication media to, A, compare notes as far as what was currently politically going on, as well as, because of their communications training and networking, they're all ex-service guys, so they knew at that period of time what protecting and defending the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, meant. And that's basically, I could never figure that out, why these guys are always so grumpy. And now that I'm a grumpy old man worried about the exact same issues, I understand.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Yep. Bill, because the copy was so bad, I was back working in the shop. Were there anything else, old tube-type radio or communications related? As far as modern state stuff, just let me state my preferences for universal boxes, and as far as your communication network, there's enough communication geeks out here. When the balloon goes up, you'll be amazed at what pulls together. My favorites right now are the Kenwood TS-50. That's normally my receiver that I use to record you off shortwave, although I have zillions of other shortwave receivers. It's just my console. The advantage with that thing is if you cut the green wire inside, it's continual receive from below the AM broadcast band all the way up through 32 megahertz, all mode. That's upper, lower, AM, CW, data, and FM. So you have a...
Just by cutting one wire?
Yes. Totally. The transmitter starts from 1.5 meg all the way up. The rig is 2500 watts PEP as far as the three power levels. They're available on the internet at HamFest for the $500 to $600 range, depending on what the deal is. And it does put out the whole 100 watts of snot continually all the way from 1.5 megahertz all the way up through 32999, if I recall. As far as on the other side of the equation, I like the Kenwood TS-741-742 tri-band rig because you can load three band modules when the appropriate wire is cut in that thing. It receives virtually the entire VHF-UHF spectrum with very little gaps in there. As far as a modern scanner, the Uniden, what is this thing? I got a bank of them. The Uniden Bearcat BC895XLT is what's called a trunk tracking scanner. That, when suitably programmed, a lot of the police and government and the city buses and all that go into a radio system that's called a trunking system, where they're all combined over multiple transmitter and receiver sites and frequencies. The problem is they're all in there jammed together, but this radio is designed to track, like, specific agencies. So it automatically follows the frequency and the PL tones to straighten that all out.
Uh-huh.
And,
now, discounting all this modern stuff, let's go back and talk about the tube stuff.
I refer to them, tank anchors.
Tank anchors. I've heard them referred to as boat anchors.
Boat anchors, tank anchors. Well, it depends on whether it was naval equipment or army equipment.
Oh, I see. Now, discussing that, you've told us your preference is Collins. Now, aside from Collins, within the realm that most people can afford, what is your next best preference in transceivers and our receivers?
A lot of the military stuff, and one of the earlier callers mentioned Antique Electronic Supply down in Tempe, Arizona, and they're just excellent as far as keeping the antiques going and hard to find high voltage filler capacitors and things like that. The other place that used to be great, because curiously, Fair Radio Sales and I are the exact same age, as are Arnold Schwarzenegger, but nevertheless, Fair Radio Sales has a lot of military equipment, but unfortunately, the military equipment that are in their current catalog are not new $5 in the box, brand new command sets that still smell like World War market is all being bid up by foreign governments and foreign governments' procurement agents inside the United States to buy stuff from air radio sales and other airborne equipment sales places. And so the market on that stuff is stratospheric. I mean, I got some old World War II definite tank anchors that are cast iron, AM broadcast low band sets that were typically used in white half tracks. They're made by General Electric. And these things, Bill, are literally tank anchors. They're all cast iron and use circuitry that was typical of the early 1930s as far as this really archaic stuff. And a long time ago, I bought one of these things for brand new in the box for like $15. The problem is the thing weighed like 300 pounds and it had to be truck shipped, and the truck shipment bill was like $50. So it was sort of a bummer. But to show you how the stuff has gotten bid up, that exact same set, which curiously still resides in the bottom of my barn, is now selling for like $600 to $800 in the military vehicle collector's paper because people need it for their white, totally correct white half tracks.
Ah, I see.
that's where a lot of the ex-military, what remains of it, is now going back in. Even the crazy old airplane radios. But I never thought they'd run out of stuff like command sets or ART-13s or some of this other stuff. Or they're just phenomenal. I mean, fields full of this stuff. But time marches on. I guess it's now 40 or 50 years later.
Yeah, and eventually it'll be crumbling to dust. But right now, most of that stuff, when you set it side by side against some of this modern stuff, holds its own really well, and some of it's better than what they make today.
Oh, yeah. Well, it certainly will after the EMP pulse, or like in the case of old Heathkit or the old Collins stuff. Hey, it still works 40 years after it was manufactured, so that means it reasonably ought to at least go another 20 years, which is all we need to worry about. Bill, looks like we're coming up on the top of the hour. I'm sure you got about 2 minutes to launch. Appreciate you taking the call, and hopefully we managed to spread some knowledge, even though it's from my particular perspective.
Well, that's okay. That's, you know, we put all these different perspectives together, and we get an overall picture from which to make our own personal decisions, and that's what it's all about.
Absolutely, sir. Carry on, Bill.
Thank you so much for your call. The number is 520-333-4578. If you want to jump in here, I mean, we're really interested in hearing from as many people as we possibly can who really know about this stuff. Where do we get tubes? Who fixes these things besides this place down in Tempe? And I'm not sure they fix it. It was cited by both of the last two callers as a place to obtain parts. Now, I'm one of those kinds of people who I could obtain all the parts I wanted to, but I'm not sure that I could put them in a radio and make them work, except for tubes. I can do that really well. Anything that plugs in or you can unplug. And I know how to use a tube tester. When I was a boy, all the radios still had tubes in them. And so when our radio didn't work, I mean, we didn't throw it in the trash and we didn't take it down to the repair place. We pulled the tubes out and took them down, and for 25 cents we could test the tubes at places like Woolworth and wherever they had a tube tester. You paid your 25 cents and you tested your tubes, and then you went and bought whatever tubes didn't test out right. You put them back in the radio, and 99 times out of 100, it worked just like it was brand new. That's what I like about that stuff. You know, these things that I have now, some of these modern things, when something goes wrong with it, I can open it up and look at it, and that's it. I better not touch anything. And I have to send it off somewhere, and it's going to cost me an arm and a leg to get it fixed, and they're going to send it back. And sometimes it works right, and sometimes it doesn't, even after they've supposedly fixed it. And all of these things that have computer chips in them are really sensitive. For instance, in the wintertime in Arizona, it's really dry, which means if you walk across a floor that has a carpet on it and you touch something that has computer chips in it, you can actually destroy that piece of equipment. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be a microwave oven. And so you have to, you learn in Arizona the expensive way not to touch anything that has computer chips in it until you've grounded yourself. And then you don't move your feet until you've grounded yourself, and then you do whatever you have to do, and then you can move your feet. Because every time you move your feet in a dry climate in the winter on a rug or carpet, you're generating electricity. And so you walk up to a Sanjian radio after you've walked across a carpet in the winter in Arizona, and you touch that radio, and a spark will jump, and I'm not exaggerating a bit, a spark will jump a half an inch from your finger to that radio, and then it won't work anymore. And you have to send it in to get it fixed because you fried it with static electricity. You see what I'm talking about, folks? And we're buying these things to keep and use in case of emergency? It's not going to work. And folks, I got news for you. These little Beijing radios that you crank up, guess what they got inside of them? We're being taken for another ride. 520-333-4578. You're listening to WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. I'm William Cooper. This is the Hour of the Time. Our subject tonight is old-type radios that we can listen to, people all over the world, and that we can transmit upon, you know, either in one piece or several pieces or whatever. Tube-type radios. They're all over the place. Isn't it amazing? Okay, thanks a lot. I was just talking to Paul, folks, who called again while that that music was playing and gave me some information. So if you want to take your pen and paper and write this down, write this down. I got some good information for you here that Paul called back and gave us. One is a place where you can get tubes, the tubes you need for your old tube radios. And that is SND Tube Sales. SND Tube Sales. The telephone number is area code 314-770-0119. That's, once again, SND Tube Sales. Telephone number, area code 314-770-0119. And they have an email address if you want to send them email. That's, here's the email address, sndtubes@stinet.com. Once again, sndtubes@stinet.com. And another one, Antique Radio Classifieds, which I've heard of this before. And so you can write to ARC and get a free catalog. ARC, P.O. Box 802-P14. That's P as in Paul. Once again, P.O. Box 802-P14. Carlisle, spelled C-A-R-L-I-S-L-E. Carlisle, C-A-R-L-I-S-L-E, Massachusetts, 01741. They also have a webpage on the internet, www.antiqueradio.com. www.antiqueradio.com. Okay, the number is 520-333-4578. We're still on our subject. The subject tonight is old radios that we can use in emergency that won't be fried by any kind of an EMP burst. Okay, you all understand what we're talking about. And as far as I have discovered, folks, they're equal to or better than most of the modern stuff that you can get today. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, good evening. Have you ever heard of these radios? I saw them just today called Roberts.
Doesn't ring a bell with me. It might ring a bell with some of the people in the listening audience. Go ahead.
I think it's made in England, and I just saw them on the internet today.
Uh-huh.
I'd never heard of that brand before, and I didn't realize that they made any shortwaves in these other countries. I thought they were all made like in China.
Oh, no. You know, up until the last few years, every country in the world uses shortwave radios like gangbusters. We were the only people who ignored them.
Okay. Now, I know they don't manufacture any in the United States except maybe Drake.
Drake does.
Okay. And they're expensive radios. They're probably very good. But,
Drake is one of the last manufacturers in the United States that makes anything in the United States.
Yeah, I have this Grundig. I bought it. I didn't know that this thing was made in China. I don't believe I would have bought that. I got it because it said Grundig. I thought it was a German radio. And as soon as I pulled it out of the way they advertised it, it was kind of like false advertising, you know, German quality, German engineering.
Well, the real Grundig was really made in Germany and was a top-of-the-line, top-notch piece of equipment.
Uh-huh.
If you bought a Grundig today that has Grundig on it that was made in China, either Grundig is now doing what most other countries is doing, and that's having their products manufactured in third world or other countries in order to save money on labor, or you've got a piece of fraudulent product, one of those two. I'm not sure which.
Yeah. Could I ask you one question tonight that doesn't have to do with the radios?
Sure, go ahead.
I've been listening on shortwave. They've got this identity message out there. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am.
I don't buy into that myself.
Good for you.
I just don't.
There's no such thing as a master race. I don't care whether it's a Jewish guy who claims that they're the master race because they're God's chosen people, or whether it's a white guy who claims he's the master race because really they're the real Israel, and the Jewish people are all fake, phony, and they're not really who they say they are, or whether it's the Black Power group, or whether it's the Japanese racists, or I don't care who it is. There's no such thing. We are all people. We all have to live here on this earth. As far as I'm concerned, racism is a plague upon humanity.
Yes.
It's used by those who want to divide us and conquer us and enslave us to keep us fighting amongst ourselves for reasons that are so absolutely stupid, it's incredible.
I'm glad to hear you take those positions, because that's the way I feel. And I heard a shortwave broadcast last night, and they were just working the Jews over nonstop. I've never heard anything like that in my life on shortwave radio. It may have been on there before, but, you know, saying the man actually came out and said that all Jews are traitors. I mean, that every single one of them. And the program, he may have the free speech or right, I guess, to say things like that. But what concerns me is that when people do say things like that, it provokes other people to violence and to do things that are wrong. And that's what really concerns me.
Well, I think somebody would have to be pretty stupid to take a message like that and believe it in the first place. For instance, I can prove that George Bush is not a Jew, but George Bush is tremendously involved in the destruction of the United States and bringing about a new world totalitarian socialist order. I can prove that Jimmy Carter is also involved in that. Jimmy Carter is a Christian, Southern Baptist, as a matter of fact. I can prove that Jerry Falwell is involved in that. Jerry Falwell is one of the great charismatic Christian leaders in this country, who's also an extreme Zionist. The Zionists in this country are mostly Christians who believe that they're the true Israel and thus the master race. I mean, it's just incredible how far off the diving board these people can go before they hit the water.
Yep. Well, it's amazing. I don't understand it. And
it's called stupidity, is what it's called. Anybody who actually believes that because somebody's skin is a different color, or their eyes look different, or they come from a different part of the world, they're not just as good as anybody else in this world.
Well, I was listening to you last night. You said you were part Indian?
Yes, Native American.
Okay, I'm sorry, then. Native American. And, well, if that's true, then they would believe you're not a part of Israel.
Well, that's what they believe. You should see some of the letters that I get. You should see what they call my children, because I'm married to a Chinese woman.
Oh, really? Well.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, I used to...
These people are dangerous.
I used to mail some letters in to the editor of the local newspaper where I used to live. And because I have a last name that is obviously people can know that I'm Jewish, after every time I would mail a letter to the editor in, I would get a letter from somebody in the mail who wouldn't identify themselves, and it would have a swastika on it.
Oh, yeah.
And they would try to intimidate me.
They'd pick you out.
I mean, it's just amazing. You know, they...
Yeah.
Even though I was probably saying things that they would agree with, you know, like conservative positions.
Yeah, well, these people are sick. They really are sick. I mean, anybody who has ever been in a Jewish community know that those people argue so much amongst themselves. How in the world could you ever get them to agree on a plan to destroy the world?
Well, yeah, like the man was saying, all Jews are traitors. That's a lie, because these Jewish people out there, they're not... I'm talking about the ordinary average Jewish person you'd meet on the street.
Yeah, they're not intertwined with anything.
No, they're not thinking about conspiracies or anything.
No, they're thinking about feeding their children and keeping their job and putting food on the table and getting laid and having a party and all the things that most sheeple think about.
You're right.
And they really fall into the sheeple category, to tell you the truth, with all of the rest of the sheeple in the country, because they think that everything is hunky-dory and nothing's going on, and that they're really not, you know, paying attention.
Yep. Well, you have a good night, and I'm just glad to hear where you stand on these kinds of things.
Oh, you should have been listening to me for years, because I've had some broadcasts where I've just flat roasted those people. I don't like them.
Well,
they're dangerous.
A lot of courage.
Well, you know, whatever it takes, I'm going to do the right thing. I don't care what it takes, and I don't care who gets mad, and I don't care who gets hurt or helped, even if it hurts me.
Yeah, one more thing. I read this book once called The Two Babylons, or The Papal
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of that one?
Yes.
I thought it was a pretty good book, but it was very hard to understand.
Well, it is hard to understand because it goes into an awful lot of the old symbology of the ancient pagan religions, which the Catholic Church, or the Vatican, as a matter of fact, incorporated in order that it could entice the people who worshipped all the pagan religions to join their church. And by this method, over 1,000 years, they literally ruled the world.
Yeah. Well, I want to get off in just 1 second so somebody else can get on. But when I see something in the church, is these letters IHS, they say it means in his service.
No.
Well, that's what they say.
No.
Well, they do.
It means in hoc signa. It's Latin. Look it up.
What is that? I thought it, could it possibly mean Isis, Horus, Seb?
No, it means with this sign I conquer.
I conquer?
Yeah.
So what is the whole meaning of that? I don't...
It's the symbol that the Emperor Constantine adopted. Now, I don't care what the church history says, this man was the Emperor of Rome, and he was actually, at the same time, serving as the Pope at that time. He is the one who made the Christian religion the official religion of Rome. And it was because of him that the first council of the Christian church was called, where they got together and decided to adopt the dates and the holidays and the symbolism of the pagan religions so that they wouldn't be constantly at war with these other religions and they could all meld as one. Now, this is probably just making Catholics just go up the wall, but I'm not talking about normal people who belong to the church. They like everybody else, belong to their church because their parents did.
Uh-huh.
They haven't really studied the history of it, and I'm going to go farther than that so you don't think I'm picking on the Catholic Church. I'm going to tell you right now that every single organized religion in this world exists solely to take money out of the pockets of the people and to control them.
Yep.
I don't care what you call it.
Yes. Well, God bless you, and I hope people listen to you, and I'm going to keep listening to you.
Well, thank you.
Because I'm very happy to hear what you said tonight about the racism and the bigotry.
Yeah, but you got to understand that it's not just this guy that you heard. There's racists in the black community. There's racists in the Jewish community. There's racists. The Japanese people are one of the greatest group of racists that you'll ever meet in your life, although they are one of the most polite groups of people that you'll ever meet also. The Chinese are in some aspects and in some of their populations not only racist but elitist. For instance, the Mandarins.
I'm going to go on and listen to you. Have a good night.
You too. Thank you very much. And thank you for calling. Well, that was interesting. We went way off the subject on that one. Let's see if we can get back somehow. Back to the subject of old tube-type radios. So if you're listening out there and you know anything about it and you can help us with where to get these radios, how much should we pay, what kind should we be buying, where do we get the tubes and the parts, and if we don't know how to fix it ourselves, where do we send them? Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening, Bill. I want to get back to the radios here. I have a suggestion.
Okay. I need you to talk a lot louder. Put that phone right in front of your mouth and talk real loud.
Okay.
That's better.
I went to an auction and found a tube tester that was there in a box of junk. I bought the box of junk for about $3.
Wow, you got a deal.
Well, I got this Mercury model 1101C grid circuit analyzer tube tester, which has testing for octo pins, 7 pins, decal, Magneval, Novar, 9 and 10 pins, Compactron, and some other ones. And a variety of test functions on it, and meter, and pitch straighteners on it. And to get this for only $3, I thought I just really came out of that being a lucky manner. And my suggestion is this, is that a lot of times there are these auctions, especially out there in the farming communities, you'll have people that have old-time items that they've kept around for an awful long time, and now... they're up on the auction block because the person passed away or whatever. also, if you go to those auctions, oftentimes you get Epson V on all kinds of old antique radios. I've seen old shortwave radios go for $40 to $50. And AM/FM radios go for a little bit less. And you can sometimes even find some old electronics parts. And, of course, you'll find other things like wood-burning stoves and all kinds of gardening equipment and stuff like that. That's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
But I recommend that the people check out the auctions, see what they're all about, and learn how to work the auction to your advantage. If you come in there and decide you're going to buy something no matter what, you may pay out the nose for it.
Uh-huh.
On the other hand, if you are discreet in what you do, you can get yourself some awfully good buys. So that's my suggestion. I just wish you the best, and God bless you, okay?
Thank you very much. Thank you for your call. That's an excellent idea. And I know it'll work, because he's absolutely correct. There are some sales and auctions across this country where people want to get rid of their old stuff, or somebody dies and whoever's handling the estate has to liquidate it. And a lot of things from way back, you know, just turn up right there, you know, and you might have a chance at one hell of a deal on some really good stuff. So pay attention to that in your area. 520-333-4578 is the number. Subject tonight is old radios for receiving and transmitting on all of the different bands. CB, shortwave, amateur, whatever, just so that we can have some kind of a network and communicate with other people in some of these terrible emergencies that happen, and without having to rely on somebody else or not having any communications at all. I know an awful lot of you live in areas of the country where if the primary services were to fail, you would be absolutely cut off from society. So one of your responsibilities is to prepare for that. You know, remember the parable of the ant and the grasshopper, I guess it's an Aesop's fable, isn't it? Pay attention to that. It's true. Good evening. You're on the air. We're getting a lot of feedback here, Paul. You need to turn your radio down.
Yeah, I'll just walk away from it.
And then you need to talk real loud.
Okay, here you go. I'm walked away from my radio. I should not have any feedback now. Is that better?
It's good. Okay.
Okay. The email, or for a full catalog, okay, email address is www.vacuumtubes, that's vacuum tubes, .com. Okay. That is for a full color catalog of SMD tube sales.
Oh, that's not what you gave me a while ago. Okay.
Well, okay, this is the one that I gave you a while ago. For the email address is sndtubes@stinet.com.
That's right.
Okay, you did have a telephone number correct. I thought you had the email address wrong the first time around.
No, we had it. That's exactly what we gave out.
Okay. Well, this guy, he's a really good guy, and he's reasonable. He also has a fax number if anybody wants to fax him. He's located in Hazelwood, Missouri. But his fax number is 314-770-9448. And if there are people out there looking for tubes, he does... you know, he does major credit cards and all that. It's shipped worldwide. He will ship the tubes to you.
Wow.
Okay. So he's an excellent source. It's best that I've found for both shortwave.
He's probably one of these old guys that live way out in the country under a big old spreading tree, and his house is full of tubes, I'll bet you.
Well, no, actually, he lives in a subdivision, man. I myself, I'm a 35-year-old hippie that just loves radio, man. Ghettos on the north side of St. Louis, man.
Oh. Well, when you said Missouri, I could just picture him out in the country with one of these old houses under a big old elm tree or something, surrounded by tubes.
They do exist, my friend. They do exist. a couple hundred acres of land and have some cows walking around. And I can say, come on, doggy. You know,
well,
and then retire back to my radio room or my shack or whatever late at night and listen to people like yourself, man. I'm enjoying the programming.
Well, good. Great.
Know about the racist kind of business there. You know, that's not my ball of wax, man. You know, I get enough of that here in the ghetto, man. Being the proverbial marshmallow on a sea of hot cocoa, if you would, for lack of better words.
Well, you know, a lot of the black community is beginning to understand how racism is being used against them and against us in order to enslave us all. And
well, I'll tell you what, man.
They're starting to wake up.
You're correct. You are correct, because I find it more and more increasingly so that a lot of, you know, the... you know, black community, as you put it, you know, they're not all the same color. They have varying shades, just like myself, you know. And, they don't like it, but they see my child playing with their children, and they kind of say, well, this guy, I guess he must be all right, because he lets his kid play with our kids.
Sure. You know, if nobody would teach this nasty stuff to children, it wouldn't exist, because children don't go out and even think of that kind of stuff.
Okay, well, I think my calling card is totally up now. I just heard a tone.
Well, I'm sorry we used up your...
Good to see you, my friend.
Sorry we used up your calling card tonight, but I really appreciate all the information you've given us.
Well, I will send you that diagram for the double bazooka. Not a problem, man.
Great.
It'll take me a little bit to get it together, but I will do it. And maybe I even might throw a zap in there or something.
Oh, great. Thank you mucho.
All right, 73.
520-333-4578. 73s, from what I understand, folks, from listening to the radio, means good wishes, good luck, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Good evening. You're on the air. Oh, boy. There's the resident jerk-off. Always got one of those out there. I bet he's got a license. You want to bet? 520-333-4578. Isn't it amazing how some people who don't have brains choose to express themselves? Poor little feller. 520-333-4578, if you'd like to contribute. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes. I heard you talking a while ago about these wind-up radios.
Uh-huh.
And you mentioned something was in them. Could you tell me what?
Yeah, well, they don't have tubes, do they?
No.
Well, I wonder how they can operate if they're hit with an EMP burst.
If they're hit with any of what?
With an electromagnetic burst.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
They won't work.
I see. Okay. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
See, nobody ever thought of that. And I got to tell you the truth, folks. I didn't think of it for a long time. And then one day, a couple weeks ago, I was sitting there, looking at my Sanjian radio, the one that we had purchased to get us through an emergency, and it just dawned on me, it just hit me like a brick right between the eyes, that it wouldn't work. And then I started thinking about all these other things, the Beijins and all these wind-up and solar-powered and all that stuff. They've got chips inside of them. They've all got chips in. That's how they can make them so little. They won't work either. And, you know, if I'm wrong about this, let me know. If they don't have any chips in them, let me know so I won't be steering you wrong. But that's what I see. That's what I see, folks. And might be intentional. I don't know. Might not. But whatever it is, we need to get it straight so that we don't fall into these traps. We've got to be able to know what's going on. And we've got to be able to communicate. We absolutely must be able to hear what's going on in the rest of the world, and we must be able to communicate. And so we can't let ourselves fall into these traps. Tube radios, the old kind of radios, that's where it's at. And you know what? Except for the ones that are considered to be top-of-the-line collector's models, they don't cost very much. They really don't. I've been looking at them all over the place. I've got some. And they're fun. They're really fun. You know, it's amazing how much fun they are. Seems like the more modern things get, the more they make it impossible for you to enjoy them. For instance, when you turn on the Sangian, you turn it on, you punch in the frequency, you hit enter, and you don't have to do anything else with that radio. That's no fun. That's no fun. At least not for me. That's not any fun. I like to be a part of what I'm doing. And so, with those old radios, you really can be. Good evening. You're on the air.
I just wanted to make a comment about the tube radios. The best ones to get that aren't ultra expensive are like your Helicrafters, like your SX96 or 99.
Uh-huh.
Or if you want to get a Hammerlund, now they can be a little more expensive, like the good ones, like which are HG170s and 180s. Those are expensive.
Now, when you talk about the Helicrafters, the SXs, are those receivers or are transceivers?
Those are receivers.
Okay. That's what my old S-108 does, the Helicrafter. It's just incredible. It blows the modern stuff right off the porch.
Yeah, and so the Helicrafter is a good model to keep, but as far as parts go, there's different ones in these publications. I can't think of like Antique Wireless Supply is one of them.
Where's that at?
I'd have to look it up. It's in one of the books. I think the Broadcast Receiver book, one of these books has the address on that. I imagine it's out there somewhere.
Oh, well, can you give us the name of some of the books that maybe people could purchase that would steer them in some of these right directions?
Universal Radio has that one about shortwave, communications receivers, past and present, those kind of books.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And there's several different listings for these kind of things. But also, if you know any old hams and stuff, I've got a brother-in-law who's an extra-class ham, and he has an old Hammerlund now. It's an amateur bands only. That's what you got to be careful when you buy tube radios.
some of them are amateur bands only. They don't cover broadcast bands.
Yeah.
And so you gotta be, you know, careful when you buy that. No, it's an amateur band only receiver. But I'm thinking about swapping it for something that is that I want.
What?
Old RCA transoceanic. good old radio with the germanium diodes in them.
Yeah, good luck though. I mean, people want a lot of money for those things.
Oh yeah. But other than that, as far as transmitting gear, I don't know what to tell you on that. That's really, you know, a caveat right there, because you can have burn up cores and the transformers and stuff. And
yeah, and they're always talking about the finals. Do you need new finals?
Burn up, but also the transformers can be ate up too.
Yeah.
Now, the only bad thing about emergency radio, it takes a lot of juice to run these tube radios, and so you're going to have a hell of a generator or have a way to work it off your vehicle.
Well, you can work it off your vehicle. You can have a generator, and everybody should have one.
Yeah.
Or you can have a solar system set up, which will provide enough power to run it not 24 hours a day, but for like 5 or 6 hours during certain portions of the day.
Yeah, you'd have to have a large solar array in order to have a large stockpile of batteries, though, to run these, because, I mean, they do take some real amperage.
Yeah, they do. That's true.
Okay. Well, that's my recommendation. Collins is like, you know, almost untouchable, like in, you know, the price range I'd be willing to pay.
I know, I discovered that. I used to know some people who had a lot of Collins, and they were real inexpensive back during that time, and then I remembered Collins, and I went looking for Collins, and I found out real quick that I don't want a Collins even if I want one, because I can't afford the Collins.
Another good one is National. National were a good one, too.
Now, nobody's talked about that yet. Tell us about National. Really? What do they look like?
They're big gray metal boxes, just like the rest of them.
Uh-huh.
But they're old tube types, and they're like, you know, late 50s, early 60s.
And all the old ones usually have two dials on the front. One is the band dial, and the other one is the fine tuning.
Yeah, the band spread, and then, of course, they all have the nice big deluxe meters on the front, usually.
Yeah. They're really pretty. I mean, they really can catch your eye and make you fall in love with them. And
that would be a book I'd recommend, though. Receivers, their communications receivers, past and present.
Well, that's interesting. Okay, I'll write that down.
Models in them, and they tell you what they're, you know, whether they're really a good value for the money or not. And they even got the yen prices. Japanese collectors are snapping up some of the best ones. But what they ask for yen-wise, if you have a Japanese collector wants your radio.
Well, that may have been true at one time, but I don't think they're doing it too much right now. They're in a deep recession. They're in trouble. They're really in trouble, and it's going to hit us, too.
But, yeah, remember, the more tubes, the better the radio, but then again, some of these tubes are getting harder to find.
I have heard that from some people, and from other people, I've told them, they've told me that they just don't know where to look, that they're there.
Yeah, and then you also got the problem of, you want to get a set that has a transformer, because the other ones are the AC-DC without a transformer,
mm-hmm.
And you can get electric, you know, fatal shock on some of the earlier sets.
I don't want to get a fatal shock. I think that's what one of our callers was talking about when he said you got to make sure that your set is grounded well.
Yeah, that's right, because you can get, you know, the last, you know, radio thrill of your life real quick. Have a good night.
I like the way you put that, the last radio thrill of your life. Thank you so much.
All right, bye-bye.
And the last radio thrill of your life. So this is, by golly, the theater of the mind, and it is thrilling to me. I love to listen to radio. I've always loved to listen to radio. Now, sometimes when I get really involved in research or some of the projects that we have going on around here, I don't get to listen too much. But whenever I can, especially in the summertime, Doyle and I just love to sit out on the porch and listen to radio late into the night during the summer when the reception is really good. We do it in the winter, but we live up in the mountains, 7,500 feet, and it's cold. It's cold in the winter, late at night. Even if it's warm in the daytime, at night it's cold. And you don't find too many people sitting out in the cold at night, unless they've got a nice rip-roaring campfire, you know, in the middle of a circle. And then you might find some people doing that. In fact, we've been known to do that, too, especially up at the ranch. 520-333-4945. 4578. And by the way, those of you who remember Jeff from our conferences, Jeff just got married March the 3rd, which was yesterday, as a matter of fact. So you might want to give him a call and wish him well, but, you know, give him a couple of weeks for the honeymoon to wear off. Good evening. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. Is this Bill Cooper?
It sure is. Can you speak a little louder, please?
This is Dave Martin in California.
Hi, Dave.
And someone called one of our broadcasters from Republic and to tell them to call me to call you. And I don't know why I'm supposed to do it.
Well, I'll tell you what the subject of tonight's broadcast is, and then you can determine whether you have anything to contribute. We're talking about old tube-type radios that you can use to receive broadcasts from all over the world, and transmitters or transceivers, as they're called. Either way, either separate or together or just receiving are the sets that are combined in one unit, which are called transceivers, but only tube-type we're interested in, and we're talking about which ones are the best ones to get. Where do you get them? Where do you get tubes? Where do you have them repaired when they break down and it's not just a tube that you need to fix?
Well, I'm good at that.
Okay, well then,
you've
got it. You've got the microphone.
Oh.
Go for it.
Well, first off, tubes are still available. A lot of them are made offshore. Of course, the Chinese are real good at making tubes, and of course, we don't like buying from the Chinese, but so what? You know, if they work, they work. But there are still a lot of surplusers out there and people who specialize in just selling vacuum tubes. And there are a few still made here in this country, especially high-power output tubes for transmitters. A lot of the old equipment that's still around, you can pick it up sometimes at ham radio swap meets and various other places.
That's what they call ham fests.
Ham fests, ham swap meets, they're all over the country. The way to find out where they're at is get the American Radio Relay League publication, QST. Most magazine stores generally will have that, or a CQ magazine or something like that. But QST has a monthly little list of where all these places are going to be during the month. Hams do still use tubes. I've got some tube gear here, some older Heath kit, and Collins gear. Of course, my thought personally is still Collins is the best, and it's still the best. And I own several pieces of that.
I know you're right about that, but
yeah.
It's so expensive that the average person really can't get into that.
Well, I buy used pieces as cheaply as I can and restore it. And I've bought pieces for as little as $200 or $300 and turned it around for anywhere from $700 to $800 to $1,000.
Wow.
Because people like it.
Uh-huh.
I also like to buy older receivers. The military, of course, there's still a lot of receivers, like, say, through Fair Radio Sales in Lima, Ohio. They have what are called the old R390 receivers.
You know, can I interrupt you for just a minute and get you to put the telephone right in front of your mouth and talk a lot louder if you possibly can?
It's all the taps on my phone.
Well, actually, it's our telephone patch here. What we have is a speakerphone with a microphone about 14 inches away from it.
Yeah, I have another little phone that I use when I'm on Republic. I have a show on Republic called the Comp Center.
Uh-huh.
And I'm the comp chief for that, so. But that's on Saturday afternoons.
Why don't you give the frequency and the time?
Well, it's on Republic Radio on G7, channel 14, 7.71 audio. And on freeservers.com, look for RRI. I'm not on shortwave yet.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you're on satellite on G7, transponder 14, 7.17 audio.
7.71.
Okay.
I don't even know what frequency you're on right now. I tried looking, but I...
7.415. 7.415 megahertz.
For 15. That's an old Mars frequency.
Yeah, it's also where the old pirates used to hang out, too.
We may have some more real soon with the way things are going.
Well, I think not pirates, but people who just need to communicate.
That's right. Real communicators.
Right.
People with a message.
You got it.
I was going to mention there's still a lot of other equipment, older equipment out there. Of course, you had the helicrafters equipment and my brain just died. But there's a lot of stuff. Heathkit had a lot of equipment out there.
What do you think of Siltronics? I see a lot of that around.
Well, Siltronics was actually made by Swan, or was a subsidiary of Swan Corporation.
Uh-huh.
And they made primarily tube-type, higher-powered CB sets south of the border. I think that most of it was made south of the border.
I have a 1011C. Yes.
Yeah.
Upper and lower sideband also.
The transceivers, of course, Swan made some really fine stuff for low cost. It was good gear. It's still a lot of people using that for HF. It was all American made, of course.
Now, when you say HF, you're talking about high frequency.
High frequency. Well, it covered generally 80 through 10 meters.
Uh-huh. And there's a lot of those out there.
The ham bands only.
Yeah, there's lots of those out there. And some of them say that they have 160. Now, what's 160?
Of course, you had Helicrafter had quite a bit out.
What do they mean by when they say 160?
160 meters is the ham band actually is 1.8 to 2 megahertz. So that would be what's called the 160 meter band.
Okay.
Yeah. It's actually the wavelength of the frequency you're looking at.
Uh-huh.
Rather than putting the meter band on there, they put the frequency in.
I see.
Or kilohertz.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Hey, how do you convert kilohertz to kilohertz to kilocycles or megahertz?
Kilohertz, kilocycles means the same thing.
That's the same thing?
Yeah.
So if I say I'm on 7.4, or if I say I'm on 7415 kilocycles, that's the same as 7415 kilohertz.
That's correct.
Okay. That was giving me some problems. I see a lot of radios advertised as from blankety blank to blankety blank kilohertz.
Right.
And I didn't know what that meant.
Recognized Mr. Hertz, was the man responsible for determining different frequency or creating some form. I don't remember the history behind it myself.
Uh-huh.
They changed it from kilocycles to Hertz.
So, but it's the same thing.
Exactly the same thing.
All right. Well, that clears up a few mysteries.
I don't even remember reading the history about Mr. Hertz. Very little.
Yeah.
But that was back when I was in high school, I think.
I see. So, what would be an optimum tube shack that would be within a reasonable cost for most people if they wanted to set up a communication center for use in case of some extreme emergency? What would you recommend?
Okay, if you're going to get a piece of tube gear, find a transceiver that hopefully is working. And if it's not, they are repairable, and you can get parts for them. And I can help you get them, or find them, or buy them, or whatever, through my company. I'll give the phone number out in a few minutes, but I can also point you in the right direction.
Okay.
Allied still sells a lot of the parts. Newark Electronics still sells some of the parts. But then there's other companies and organizations that you can get them. Diggy afterwards. And there's a magazine out there called Antique Electronic Supply Catalog. And I'll give you a phone number for that, so everyone get your pencils and paper there. And they sell tubes, books, parts, supplies. Their phone number is area code 602-820-5411. That's 602-820-5411. And they have a fax on 800. Should I give that out, Bill?
What is it now?
They have a fax on 800.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, it's 800-706-7689.
And that's a fax.
6789.
Okay, and that's a fax number, right?
800 number fax, right.
Okay, great.
Now, they have a little catalog that you can send for. I think they charge you $3 for it.
Well, that's okay. If we're going to do this, it'll be worth it.
Tubes, the older styles, sockets, transformers, higher voltage transformers. Now, remember, when you're dealing with vacuum tubes, you're dealing with high voltages. In a receiver, you might deal with upwards of 200 or 300 volts DC. And a transmitter, especially in the final output stage of the transmitter, you can deal with as much as, well, most of the older transceivers used 6146 final tubes. Some of those were about 800 volts. The ones that use sweep tubes, that was a type of tube used in the TV sets, were anywhere from 6 to 900 volts. And you'd find that probably, I don't remember what the Swan had in it. Heat kit. You can find heat kits and some of that kind of equipment for as little as $100.
I've seen some heat kits that are still in kit form that you can put together.
I wish I could find them. I'll put them together. I used to love to build that stuff.
Wow. Well, if I'd have known that, I would have picked them up. But I didn't know anything about it, to tell you the truth, at the time.
Actually, you'd probably have to replace some of the old dried-out capacitors. That's the one thing you want to be careful of when you do get a piece of gear. Now, if you buy a transceiver, always be sure that you get the power supply with it.
Yeah. Because you can't find a lot of them now.
Generally didn't have the power supply. And heat kits all use the same little supply. So if you find one heat kit, it'll work with other ones. Not only that, but it can be modified to work with a Swan.
Uh-huh.
And some of the others that had 6-volt filaments.
Now,
12-volt filaments, I'm sorry.
For instance, on our 1011C,
uh-huh.
It's got a 12-prong male power fitting on the back of it.
That's a Jones connector on those.
And where do you get those kinds of things?
The Jones connector?
Yeah, and the power supply that goes with it.
The supply you'd probably have to build up today.
Yeah.
But if you have the schematic of the unit, it's not that hard.
Uh-huh.
There's several companies out there still make the transformers. You can still buy the capacitors, but you do want to replace most of the electrolytic capacitors. That's a big, generally aluminum or paper capacitors with the line on the side or the positive end on it. Those they get dried out.
Uh-huh.
And when they dry out, holes tend to get poked in the dielectric material or the insulating material between the plates, and that'll cause them to break down, and you get a lot of hum in the radio set and things.
Wow.
So you want to avoid that. And
now, does that require desoldering and soldering?
Yes, it does.
And so you've got to be pretty good to do that. Amateurs shouldn't be doing that. Now, somebody who hasn't done that before shouldn't be in there doing that kind of thing.
That's true. If you don't know what you're doing, don't touch it. The other thing, when you do open a setup like that, if you are planning to do it, be sure that you touch both ends of the cap if you don't know which end it is. with a screwdriver and touch that to ground or something, an insulated device. Because if they are holding a charge, and they do hold a pretty good charge, you can get knocked for a loop.
Your last radio thrill, as the last caller put it.
And I like to say one thing, real radios glow in the dark.
Oh, I've heard that before, you know, and I'm beginning to become a believer.
They really do. I love them.
Well, we're out of time, and, you know, I want to really thank you for this. I would like for you to call me at the same number tomorrow afternoon.
Okay. And so, can I give you a number also and the people a number?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. My company name is Martronics, and I help people in this area. And the phone number is 805-239-1932. That's 805-239-1932.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Bill, and feel free to call me, too.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Good night. And that's it, folks, for tonight. I hope my voice isn't too loud. I had to turn the pot way, way up on the last caller because his voice was just so low. And he has a radio program. That's very unusual for somebody who's on the radio to project that low. But he gave us some really, really good information. And tomorrow I'm going to try to talk to him and arrange some way where we can get his help on a more permanent level. And those of you with satellite dishes, you can tune in to his broadcast. Although, you know what? He didn't give us the time. It's satellite G7, transponder 14, 7.71 audio. And it's on Saturday. I remember that. I don't remember if he gave the time or not. Maybe I just didn't hear it. But anyway, we're out of time for tonight's edition of the Hour of the Time. Good night, folks, and God bless each and every single one of you. I hope that we have opened your eyes to something that we've all overlooked and need to correct, and I hope that we all get busy correcting it right now. Good night, and God bless each and every single one of you.
Here's a rich bouquet, child Dubonnet.
Wherever friends gather in smart homes today, you'll find Dubonnet. Another Shenley product of elegance.
A votre santé, Paris Dubonnet is the favorite of the British one.
Its distinctive taste has never been duplicated.
I prefer Dubonnet your American way.
On the rock.
Oui, a votre santé.
Try Dubonnet. So light, so right. Before dinner, at parties, anytime.
Try Dubonnet, Dubonnet, Dubonnet.
Another Shenley product of elegance. Product of USA. Shenley Import Company, New York, New York.
Yo-ho, yo-ho, brushless or lather, boys, whichever you've got ocean.
50 cents for shaving cream, $1 for the lotion.
Old Spice means quality, said the captain to the bosun. So look for the package with the ship that's in the ocean. Yo-ho, yo-ho.
Who put eight great tomatoes in that little bitty can? You know who,
In case you don't, it's Contadina tomato base.
In the interest of goodwill, the Hoffman Beverage Company feels compelled to make this announcement. It's simply this. All Hoffman flavors have that happy taste, except sarsaparilla. We might as well come right out with it. We haven't quite hit that happy, carefree note in sarsaparilla. Now, please don't misunderstand us. Our Hoffman sarsaparilla is absolutely dependable. It's trustworthy. It's loyal. And many fine, upstanding citizens love it. But it just isn't what we call happy. You take our Hoffman.
You're listening to 101.1 FM Eager. Classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM is your community service nonprofit radio station.
Fairy tale can come true. it can happen to you. If you're young.